This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So
we'd love to get you to say your names to try and distinguish your voices on these tapes. I don't know if that's going to be possible.
Okay, okay.
Not before every answer, though, surely.
No, just the first time.
I was going to say.
Okay, I'll give it a bash.
Go.
So your name is?
I'm James, who plays Fred.
And I'm Oliver, who plays George.
Yeah, we're going to have a problem. But anyway, let's do that. just so you know, when these quotes run, if it goes opposite, just know we tried.
Okay.
Okay. I want to start with a joke question for the two of you. What's it like in the real world being in these two films, playing these two iconic characters? What perks do you get when you go to Starbucks and whatnot, if any?
Quite a lot of people. I mean, I suppose the best thing about it, I mean, because we've been out with Tom Tom especially, I think, is the complete other end of the spectrum. Because if we're ever out, for example, 9 times out of 10, like kids especially, they'll want to come over and speak to. They feel more welcome speaking to Oliver and I than they will speaking to Tom. Even though Tom's a lovely chap and everything, but because he plays Malfoy, they all think he's instantly evil. Whereas Oliver and I are a bit more approachable. So, in that sense, I think.
Yeah, we're quite jokey anyway. So we always have a laugh with each other and our friends. So yeah, there's a bit of similarity there, I suppose.
Now, big things happen to your characters in these films. In the past, you've been almost sort of comic relief, but in these two, you die, and you lose an ear, right?
So yeah, there's some stuff that goes on, yeah. So yeah, it's a bit different in this one.
Can you talk about sort of getting to those places for these characters? I mean, it becomes very serious.
I guess it's kind of... We never kind of wanted to shy away from, even when we were in doing the other ones, yeah, we had the comic relief and everything, but we didn't want to make them like clowns, as it were, all the time. And a lot of the guys that like the fans we've met and everything, a few of them have remarked upon the fact that they're quite glad that it wasn't as if we turned up and every so often it was hi kind of thing. But I guess it kind of makes them more real, if that's they're not. In, I think that's the characters anyway. They're You kind of think because they're so playful, then they're kind of invincible to that dangerous aspect. Mm-hmm. But then obviously you discover they're not.
Mm-hmm. And for you, Oliver, right?
Yeah.
you have a particularly tough thing because you watch your twin die, and I can't imagine what that must be like to play.
I mean, it was it's a bit odd. It's a bit surreal as well. Cause it's not just necessarily your character brother. He's actually your proper brother, so it is quite strange. But as Jane said, we never tried to shy away from that whole part of Fred and George. So I think the only time you actually see them when they're not laughing about is in the fourth film, I think, when they have a bit of a scrap with each other. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, they've always been quite laughy and jokey. So yeah, to do this has been quite different, but it's also been quite fun.
Yeah.
Especially the part in part one. There's some cool parts.
And the other question I've been asking the cast members who have been sort of along for the entire ride, which you two have, is what does it feel like now coming to the end? And have you given yourselves a chance to think about that? Or you know, has the realization sunk in that this is it?
I don't know. It's weird. Well, like apparently the crew, if you're in the cast of the crew who've done all the films, you're called a lifer now. So right. They've been here for life. But I haven't really thought about it too much. I guess it's kind of like when you leave high school or something like that, then you've been with all these guys for so many years, and then obviously that's come to an end somehow, and then you're going to go off doing whatever. So, but I guess I only really gave it a big thought. It kind of hit me yesterday when I was driving to the hotel, which I've been practically living at for the last 10 years, and I was kind of like, well, I'm not going to do this journey for much longer and for this particular reason. It kind of hit me like, oh, maybe I should make more use of the room service and that kind of stuff.
No, same for me yesterday when I was unpacking. Whereas certainly on, say, 4 and 5, when we were down every week, as it were, the routine was just, you know, Sunday night travel down, unpack, da da da. And as I was doing it yesterday, I thought, yeah, I'm not going to do this much more. So it's starting to sink in now. At the beginning of the picture, we didn't really think much of it. It just seemed to be like we're back at a normal routine, but now it is starting to settle in a bit. So, but it's just something you got to deal with, I suppose.
Yeah.
Which one of you has been doing assistant directing work?
I did, yeah, James, I did it on the last one. I haven't done it on this picture.
How was that, and why didn't you continue?
It was fun. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it for every reason that I wanted to do it. And, you know, I learned probably more in my first month doing that about the film industry than I did in the 5-6 years previous of acting, because we're kind of hidden away from the 5 a.m. starts and all this, that, and the other, which I learned very quickly are real. And, but it was, it kind of made me a lot more professional as an actor, the sense that, whereas before, like, if you had rehearsals, you'd kind of like have a joke around with your fellow cast members, whereas obviously then you realise people have been there for a long time before you got there and they're wanting to crack on with their job. And I thoroughly enjoyed it and would recommend it to everybody, but the reason I didn't continue it was simply for a few reasons. One, this is the last Potter and I kind of wanted to be spoiled. But also I couldn't really continue on that path whilst acting, because if I'm acting then I can't do any running, as it were, so I couldn't really branch out in that. So,
is this something you'd want to do in the future, directing, or do you want to keep acting?
I'd like to...
Both of you, actually.
But I guess it kind of made me open more to a lot of the other sides of the industry. Acting is primarily where I'd like to go. Seeing how the visual effects guys work and the special effects guys, just seeing their visions, and the art department guys, like seeing their visions bring it in, it's really, you kind of think, oh, that's really interesting. I don't think those guys get the recognition get made.
Yeah, certainly not. No, I mean, there's some guys who have been packing up in the art department because there's nothing left to design anymore. And yet they've been here for well over 10 years, like much longer than we have. Right. So for them, I bet it's even harder.
Yeah, because they're leaving early.
But yeah, leaving party early.
How did they accomplish George's ear in this?
I'd just say that's a trick of the trade. But it's definitely not CGI.
Well, no, because Oliver took a, like, we had a picture of it, and we were at the pub with our mates, as we do normally when we're back home, and we're saying, like, you talk about what you're doing at work. And like, quite a few of our guys are like builders and plasterers and electricians. He said, I was a bit of an accident at work the other day. And
I still had a hat on as well.
Yeah, he had like a beanie hat on, like covering his ear, and he was. I was like, oh, "What happened? And look at this! Bloody hell! What the hell you done there?"
but it was when it like a flat when it was it first happened. So all the costume was all bloody and everything else. So it looked pretty.
It looked more gruesome, out of a Tarantino film than a Potter film, I think.
It was quite funny, actually. The first time they were putting it on the radio, came on stuck in the middle with you.
Oh, no.
So it seemed quite ironic that song was on when they were taking my ear off.
I'm curious if both of you could talk about your when you first got the book and you first read, you know, Part 7, Deathly Hallows, and, you know, reading about what your resolution is to both of your characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were in Japan, actually, when it was released, and the Japanese version hadn't come out. That was coming out a couple of weeks later, but the English version was out there. So I got it, and because I was on holiday, I turned my phone off so no one could tell me what I was on. I pretty much blitzed through it in like 2 days. And it was just really, I couldn't put it down, and it was, but like you say, like when you're reading what the characters that like we've come to be. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I can remember I was in this train, I was on the bullet train, and the part went, what happens to Fred, and I was, oh. And literally at that second, the ticket guy came around asking Japanese for my ticket, and I was like, "I've just died, mate. Leave me alone. let me get with."
So I made the mistake of leaving my phone on, and I got a text message from my friend saying, "God, what did you say to J.K. Rowling? She doesn't like you guys. You lose your ear, and James dies." It was, oh, cheers, mate. Like, but you know, it was quite strange because there were guys at the sixth premiere, weren't there, or the fifth premiere before it came out, and. And they actually, I don't know how they'd worked it, but they said, "Fred's not going to last. Fred's not going to last." So that was quite.
I don't know how they got it, I guess, or not.
But they seemed pretty confident on it. But it was very interesting.
When you're preparing for a death scene, does it actually make you think about how you would feel? About your own mortality when you're.
Not particularly. I'm not really that way in. My theory is kind of like when your numbers up, your numbers up. So, but I kind of did kind of fall asleep when I was lying there once, and I woke up and like there's hardly anyone in the hall, and I, And then you could see them all like giggling through the window, and I was like, I was really in character there. I was so thrilled. Yeah. No, I guess it kind of, I don't know, like, I don't want to make it like a John, like an old Western when you're staggering around for ages kind of thing, but it was, no, it's just part of the acting process, I guess.
Do you get a big death scene, or does it happen like
I can't say. I'll keep that one.
Mark was talking before about how there's a very kind of thing in the air that they don't make movies. They're not going to be making movies of this scale with the giant sets and all that as the industry goes forward. Do you guys ever stop to think about just the accomplishment of what's been done? 8 movies, like almost all the same cast, consistent throughout, very faithful to the source material.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any film series anywhere what's like Potter. I mean, I suppose the thing you could compare it to is Star Wars, but then again, I think they kind of lost the big sets, you know, like here where it's exactly the same. And it's a shame that a lot of people just perceive that it's just going to be ultimately CGI. Whereas like the courtyard outside, that's just incredible. If you and yet when we first started, we used to go all up to Alnwick and all around the north of England to the castles there. And yet the sets outside, you wouldn't tell the difference from a camera point of view. So it's really incredible. I think we've kind of started to take it for granted, the size of the set and the detail of them. But yeah, it'll be weird if they don't keep on with those type of things. But I suppose there's finance and all that what goes into it. But
I guess that because this was Oliver and I, it was our first production we were in, so we kind of came into it thinking, wow, every movie's like this. This is amazing. And it was Robbie Coltrane who told us at the first premiere, this is like having a Rolls Royce for your first car. So like you're probably not going to get any better than this. But so enjoy it and take it for granted and like appreciate it. And I can remember like we were in the Great Hall today doing a rehearsal, and I can remember the first time. It was literally like in the book when Harry walks through, and it was like that when like because it all the background
dressed,
fully dressed, all the background kids like sitting there, and it was. Yeah, it was at the time when the candles were actually floating, and I was going, "Wow, this is
it's like you're really walking." In the
yeah, and it was, yeah. And it was weird. That was almost 10 years ago, and I was about a foot shorter. But it was like, yeah, it was, and just yeah, like sets like that.
I think sets like it's such an iconic set as well. There's a lot of things throughout movie history what people think about like defines a certain film or a certain thing, and I think the Great Hall is certainly up there for Harry Potter, and being there again today, it still never loses its magic on us, especially when we haven't been in there for a while, and it actually seems exactly the same as the first day we went in it, you know, and it's it would be a shame if they do bring it down, but we were filming in there when it had a bit of a battle going on, and that was a bit. What's happening here, but it's yeah, it's still good fun, isn't it?
Is each film a more exciting experience than the last, or do you have memorable moments scattered throughout, like the joke up in number 6 and then there's the big brawl in the hall in number 4 with the beards?
It's kind of like you've got I don't want to say they're all brought into one, but it is. But if I can, I guess it's like what I say when you're at school and you have your certain year groups, but then when you look back it's all kind of in that same era, as it were. So, you know, the hall especially, I remember loads of things from that. So, like the fourth film when we had the beards, and then we were wrestling around on the floor, and Oliver broke the director's rib, and the sixth one in the joke shop, and that set was, like, going back to the set question, that was probably the best set I've ever been on because the detail in all the props and how big it was. So. I think, yeah, just little things about the whole studio in general, like just like the little thing, like we kind of know the studio now by like the back of our hand, so if we want to sneak away for whatever reason to wind up the ADs, like, yeah. Which being an AD, I kind of learned how to tick them off.
But I like that it's different from each film we've done, there's always been a different thing what you'll remember for that film. Certainly the first film, the first thing the only thing I think of is when we're filming at King's Cross Station for the first time, and that was when we started to get a lot of people who were watching what was going on, like, oh, this is Potter and everything, and that was like the attention was starting to become there. And then on the second film, when we were away we're filming up north in the north of England, which was quite cool, could have been quite chilly as well, but it was a summer scene. And then like the third film, when Alfonso was on board, the sets seemed to get a bit, a bit bigger, would you say? And then the fourth film, obviously back in the Great Hall again. Fifth film, we go, and the Quidditch World Cup actually for the fourth film, because that was a great atmosphere as well, and it was a real real buzz at the time, wasn't it? So yeah, there's always there's lots of things what you think about when you look at it.
Some of the other actors were talking about David Yates and what he's really brought to the last four films and the overall scope and scale of the series. Could you talk a little bit about what he's brought to that and how that's helped you guys with your characters?
Yeah, I guess he, I mean, all the directors have been great, and I'm not just saying that because we work with them, but genuinely, I genuinely mean they have all been great in their own certain ways. Like, and it's kind of like the best college you could get for acting because you have all the great actors around you and like really great directors as well. So I suppose David kind of made us think more about inside the character, whereas before it was kind of like you're playing this thing, whereas Dave's kind of like you become this character and feel what, just like the little movement in the eye kind of thing, like why would they be doing that? And that's kind of helped with, I say especially like the scene when George has his ear blown off, and obviously Fred doesn't know whether, when he first finds him, when he first sees him, he doesn't know whether he's alive or dead, so that kind of came into to help, like, well, how would you feel if Oliver's ear was blown off? And
or even trying to think back to if anything similar, or not, you know, if you've ever had a moment like that in your life and how you felt at the time. So you get a lot more emotionally attached to it, I suppose. Certainly the scene when Fred's all laid out, as it were.
And, I haven't died though yet.
Pardon?
I haven't died though yet, so you can't really use that one.
Well,
it's a thing.
But there's certain parts where you think about what's happened, like when we used to do the Quidditch games. You know, what would it be like if you made that, if you saw Harry grab the snitch at the last thing? And I just think to like when we used to play football for the school team, you know, and like we'd score and everything like that. And you just things you could try and relate it to, which have really, yeah, really helped.
Hypothetically speaking, are there any items that you'd like to take home? Or have taken home?
Purely hypothetical.
But this is
yeah.
not, Pure, it purely, not actually yeah. happened.
No,
hypothetically. I mean, there's a few good things hypothetically what would have been nice to have hypothetically in the joke shop. you know, like hypothetically the sweets and everything. But I mean, I think I'd like.
Was one of those things where you're standing in the set and you're sort of just pockets are filling up?
No. You wait till they go home.
No, yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of like there's a reason why we're all very much like that in the actual set. Pockets seem to fill out. But we, I'd love to have the wand, I think, would be the main thing I'd like. Just because each wand is individual to each character. And Fred and George's wands are shaped like different styles of broomsticks.
And like, so, yeah, yours is a broomstick, and then Fred's is a like a pine cone kind of thing. But I think I kind of messed up my one when I kind of broke it while I was doing, and it wasn't anything action. Yeah,
it was the photo shoot for the posters.
And it's so you think it was a battle, but I was literally just messing around, like flicking it up in the air, missed it, and it kind of cracked in half. And looked at the prop car, like, gonna keep that.
I have time for one more question.
I think I know the answer to this, but. Speaking of the wands, I imagine each actor has several identical copies, or maybe not. But also, do you have the same wand throughout, or have you used the same wand throughout the years?
Like, I don't know if it's the I don't know if it's the exact same.
I know I've got three.
I think it's three different types.
There's like a rubbery. There's a hard rubber. And the other two are wood. I know the other two are wood because I broke both of them. But the other
very delicate.
We're very careful with these. But they, but yeah, but you wouldn't like to look at them. You wouldn't tell at all. But I know that the designs have been the same since the third film. But as the actual ones go, I think there's three, maybe more for other people. I don't know, or less probably.
I think that's it with the this is another thing that we learnt with the props and everything is how detailed everything is, and they're slightly different. Like in the first couple of movies with the Quidditch, like we had the bludger bats, and some of them were like pretty much foam, and others were like really hard stuff. And we went to the exhibit with all the props, like the prop tour and everything, and they had the one bludger there, and the lady was saying, "Look at the detail on this. Look at that." I mean, it was kind of funny because like, well, I remember dropping that. That's where that detail came from. But then in other props, like even like the money in the in Gringotts or anything like that. Like, they are all individually made, like, with the
individual currency, you know, with the heads on and everything. So it's a shame that you can't just have a camera on a certain piece. And even the newspaper articles, the inside is actually like that. The cereal boxes have got different slogans about making you fly faster and everything. So it's really incredible the detail that goes into it.
What's is quite good on the newspapers, like the Daily Prophet, like on the back page, some of them are like, they're completely encrypted kind of thing, but there's like kind of jokes throughout the studio, like written in, and like aliases given, but you know who those people are kind of thing. So things like that are quite fun as well.
I'm just curious how many copies of the Daily Prophet are in your house.
Hypothetically, none.
It's all hypothetical.
No, we've... No.
You're speaking to David Barron in a bit, so you're going into lots of trouble.
It's very quiet, yeah.
Okay.
Very good.
Cool. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
Now to try